благодати представляет серию проповедей «Трансплантация страха».
This is absolutely brilliant. This is gorgeous out here in the woods, don't you think? Can you believe the amount of effort it took to build this and bring this out and set this up for you all? I don't know who are the party who are responsible for this, but I actually think if you would with me just applaud them, because that's crazy. This is beautiful, and the fire is ready to go at a moment's notice. So maybe the sermon will be so hot tonight that the wood will just flame up. That'd be great. I definitely can tell you I have never preached before with tiki torches around. So I'm going to write this in my journal when I go back to my room tonight about preaching with the tiki torches. Yeah?
You can write this in your journal.
Oh, no thanks. You know, I have nothing against the NASB. I really don't. It's my friend. I preached from the NASB until I grew up. And no, I'm just kidding. No, the NASB is great, but I did bring my ESV with me. I hope that you'll forgive me that faux pas. But I didn't know that the choice had been made to go with the New American Standard. Well, thank you guys for laughing and clapping with my Jackie Velasquez little performance earlier. Perhaps that was more about me than you really needed to know. That side of me only comes out every once in a while. In fact, I'm not really that much fun at all. I'm really not funny, and I'm really not that much fun. My wife is totally the better half of me. Sometimes you hear that phrase, this person is the better half of me. And my wife is totally the better half, and my kids totally make me look good. I have a 5-year-old daughter named Maggie. In fact, her 5-year-old birthday was just this past Saturday, and we went to the Red Robin, and we had a good time. She's my little diva princess girl. And then we have really the exact opposite of that in our son, who is going to be 2 years old in November. His name is Calvin, and he is an absolute terror around our house. He is, if you know anything about John Calvin, who was the reformer, our Calvin reforms our household on a daily basis. And with the rod, we are trying to reform him back into some obedience. But I absolutely love them, and they send their greetings from Marysville. But they totally make me look good. And so I'm sorry that you don't get to meet them with me, because I'm a much better person with them. So anyway, they send their greetings. And if that song was more about me than you wished that you would ever get to know, I have just a little bit more that I'd like to talk about at the beginning of the message tonight. How many of you are between 13 to 15 years old? Can you raise your hands? That's a lot of you. Obviously, the rest of you are probably older than that. You know what? When I was 13 to 15, really from the time I was in junior high through my first couple years of high school, I would summarize those years with one word: misery. I pretty much hated my junior high and high school, at least the first couple years of my high school life. I remember being miserable. I don't really remember enjoying very much. What I came to find out that the reason for my misery was really my own fault. Now, I didn't know that at the time, and I'll share how it was my fault here in just a little bit. But it's not really because I was a dork. I mean, maybe I was a little bit of a dork, but I wasn't like a major dork. I actually had some friends, and maybe I wasn't on the A-list of cool, but that's not the reason that they were so miserable. It's not because I was an idiot and like I couldn't track with what my teachers were talking about in class. I wasn't a 4.0 scholar either. But it's not because I wasn't smart enough to get by. It isn't because I didn't have any friends. Like I said, I had some friends. I later came to realize that those relationships were relatively superficial. And yet I remember a lot, and there is a reason that I'm telling you this, but I remember a lot of really sad. Girls, I don't want you to go, oh, okay, when I get done with this. That's not the point. But I remember a lot of sad, lonely, miserable nights that I spent in my room wondering what was wrong with me and wondering, yeah, see, that's not... See, because Because some of you are going, oh, because you relate to that. And I'm about ready to tell you why you relate to that. But the point is, I remember a lot of those nights, and I wasn't the kind of guy who listened to a lot of music. Most people today listen to music when they get in those conditions, and they plug in their iPod, and they have their earbuds in their ear, of course made by Apple, so that part is acceptable. But back in the day when I was in junior high and high school, if I wanted to listen to music, I had to use these things. Maybe you've seen them on like the History Channel, called cassette tapes. And if I wanted to listen to music, I had to get out a cassette tape and actually stick it in a tape deck, and there were moving parts and all these kinds of things. And I didn't really invest my money in an audio system or in music for that matter. And so my nights were spent alone, lonely, and very quiet. I was left to myself to wonder questions like why my mom and dad bought my basketball shoes at Payless. You know, they don't sell Nikes, or at least when I was growing up, they didn't sell Nikes and like real brands at Payless. They sold like Keds and other little things. And so all of my friends on the basketball team, they were wearing their Nikes and Avias. That was a big brand. I remember all my friends had Avias, and I had, you know, something that didn't even say the name of it on it. And I was like the only one on the team. And so I was left wondering why my parents bought my shoes at Payless while everybody else got to go to the sports store to get theirs. I'm being honest now. I remember dreaming about how I could get girls to think I was cool, and I wondered how many push-ups it was going to take before I was hot. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be hot. And so I'd do push-ups and sit-ups sometimes in my room, but that didn't really seem to work very well. I wondered what kind of haircut I needed to be cool. What part of Walmart actually had cool clothes in it, because I knew that that's where I was going back to school shopping, was at Walmart, and where I could find the cool clothes that would make people think I was awesome. I remember trying to talk to my dad one time about this whole thing, about how sad I was and about how I felt like nobody liked me. And I remember my dad basically telling me that was stupid and I was just wrong, and then he left. Now, needless to say, that was not the most helpful counsel that I've ever gotten. You're stupid and wrong, and then leave. But nevertheless, I still remember that to this day. That was kind of his response to that. And as you might imagine, it didn't really make it any better. I was very sensitive to what other people thought about me. And I desperately wanted to please at least some of them. I didn't necessarily want to please everybody, but I at least wanted to please a few people, because I thought that if they thought I was great, then we could all be great together, and then life would just be awesome. And I know that some of you who are sitting out there tonight, you might not write that out or say that out loud, but that is exactly how you're living your life. And you are spending an awful lot of lonely nights. You're spending an awful lot of time thinking about how much better your life would be if you just had this or you just looked like that. And all of the great people thought you were great too, and then you'd just be happy. Then life would be great. The problem with that is, number one, that's not what really makes a person happy, is having the great people think that you're great. But I was caught in a trap. I didn't know that it was a trap at the moment, but it was a trap. And if you are in that position, that is a nasty trap. That is a very deep hole. That is an inevitable disappointment. In fact, do you know what they call it when you live your life based on what other people think about you? What is that called? That's called the fear of man. And that's a sin. The reason that my junior high life and the beginning of high school was so miserable was my own fault, because I was in sin. Because I was fearing man. And my opportunity, my assignment for us tonight is to study the fear of man from Scripture, as that connects with the fear of God. And you've been talking about the fear of God so far this week. But my assignment tonight is to talk about the fear of man and how inappropriate that is and really how miserable that will make you. Indeed, it is a trap. And if you'll take your copy of God's Word and look at Proverbs chapter 29, verse 25. If you can actually see it with the lights of the tiki torches. Proverbs 29, verse 25. Very simply says, the fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. The fear of man lays a snare. I didn't actually realize that your theme verse was from Proverbs 14. Can you give me your theme verse for the camp? The fear of the... That was not quite as good as when Eugene was leading you do that, but nevertheless, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. And then what's the next part? That one may avoid the snares of death. And have you talked about what a snare is? A snare is a trap. It's something, it would be a part of the hunting world where you would lay a trap, you would lay a snare. And typically a snare was something that is deceptively attractive. That is, it would make the animal think that they were going to get something good out of it. And you know what? The fear of man is that exact same kind of trap. It is a snare. It will catch you. It will entrap you. It will entangle you. And while it seems like the approval of other people will be so satisfying and fulfilling, once you get caught, it is tough to get out. And if you want to avoid the snares of death, this is one of those snares that I'll remind you at the end, ultimately can lead to death. It is the fear of man. I suspect that many of you have been ensnared by the fear of man, and I don't really know you. Like, I don't spend time with you. I don't hang out with you. But I tell you what, I pastor young people. That's my job. That's my life. That's my every day of the week, is spending time talking with, hanging out with, being with young people, junior high and high school students. In fact, I practiced, quote unquote, preaching this message yesterday to my own students. And most of them, I didn't tell them that I was preparing it so that I could share it with you all tonight, but most of them felt like I preached it just for them, because it's such a major struggle in most young people's lives, the fear of man. And my goal tonight is to talk about the fear of man. We're going to talk about three different elements. We're going to talk about the roots of the fear of man, where that comes from. We're going to talk about the reflections of the fear of man, how it manifests or how it shows itself, how you can identify the fear of man out in the wild, out on the streets. And then third, we're going to talk about some remedies for the fear of man. And really the goal of this is to help you either get out of the trap if you're in it, or perhaps even to avoid it altogether. So number one, the roots of the fear of man. Where does the fear of man come from? What's the source? What's the origin? What does the fear of man mean? Now, when we talk about the fear of man, we're not necessarily talking about you right now. Let's say you really have to use the restroom. As engaging as my sermon is so far, you know that if you want to listen to the rest of it, you need to go. So let's imagine that you take off by yourself and you get about 100 yards away from here and you meet somebody who's about 400 pounds and they've got a bunch of machine guns and 5 o'clock shadow. They haven't shaved in a couple days and they look mean. You should run at that point, okay? There is an appropriate amount of fear at that point that may actually help you stay safe. That's not the kind of fear of man that we're talking about. We're also not talking about the fear of man when we talk about respect of other people who deserve our respect. For example, like law enforcement or various government officials or various other people in our culture, in our society who deserve our respect. And there's a measure of fear that's right to give to them. The fear of man that we're talking about, and if you want to write down a definition for the fear of man, here it is. It's kind of simple, I think, but being governed or controlled by someone else's opinions. Being governed or controlled by someone else's opinions. Many of you have read the book, When People Are Big and God Is Small, and that definition comes straight from that book. Being governed or controlled by someone else's opinions. When we fear men, what we're talking about tonight, the fear of man lays a snare. That trap is when we are so consumed with and so nervous and anxious about what other people are thinking about us. Typically, it's not just that we're concerned that they're thinking about us. We want them to think highly about us. We want them to have thoughts of praise about us. We want them to approve of us, to like us, to include us. And so many young people, in fact, it works for everybody, but in particular, it seems like young people are trapped by this governing desire to have other people like them and have other people include them and be approved by other people. That's the fear of man. From what we wear, to what we own, to how we do our hair. Some of you are getting up extra early in the morning. I haven't been here for a morning yet, so I don't know who you are. If all of you sleep in tomorrow morning, hey, that's okay with me. But some of you, and typically this happens to the ladies, you get up an extra 4 or 5 hours early just so. Okay, maybe 4 or 5 hours is a stretch, but you get up extra early to primp and to do the hair and the makeup, and you put your new good-looking face on so that other people will approve of you and they will like you. I know that that's what we do, and we choose our clothes and we choose our cars and we the way that we talk and what we talk about and where we go. All of those kinds of things are rooted in the fear of man. You realize that commercials on TV play on your fear of man. Advertising in the magazines, especially ladies, and it works for guys as well, but the commercials and the advertising that you soak in every day are teaching you how to fear man. Because it's telling you, if you don't have this pair of shoes, you're not cool. And if you're not cool, people aren't going to like you. And if people don't like you, then you're going to be home alone on Friday night when everybody else is out having fun with the rest of the cool people. And we're scared that we're not going to be included in that. That's the fear of man. If your teeth aren't white enough, you need to buy this kind of toothpaste so that people will like you. Isn't that what they're selling? They're not selling you white teeth. They're selling you a good feeling about yourself because other people will like how white your teeth are. That is rooted in the fear of man. That's peer pressure. That's another way people talk about it. It's the fear of man. Well, where does that come from? I mean, is the fear of man natural? Is that something that's built into us? You bet that's built into the flesh. That's not built in for a Christian. Fear of man, being governed and controlled by what other people think about us, by their opinions, is not a Christian thing. It is a human thing in that it's a fleshly thing and a sinful thing. In fact, I'd like to identify three roots of where the fear of man grows out of and is connected to these three things that are in us, okay? Number one, the roots of the fear of man is pride. You realize when you are governed and controlled by what other people think about you, that is pride. That is the most fundamental and universal reason that people are concerned about what other people think of them. Now, you might have thought otherwise. You might have thought it's a lack of what? Self-esteem. Do you realize nobody has low self-esteem? Now, I'm not a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I don't play one on TV. But no one thinks too little about themselves. You know what their problem is? They think that other people think too little about them. People who talk about, you know, just not being sure if they're that cool or if they're that great, it's not that they really question whether they're cool or not. It's that other people aren't acting like they're cool. There is no such thing as real lack of self-esteem. We all feel good enough about ourselves to take care of ourselves. In fact, Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 that no man ever hated his own flesh. And ultimately, you get to the end, because some of you perhaps even are wondering this about, well, what about somebody who takes their own life? What if they commit suicide? Doesn't that person really hate themselves? You know what? Typically, that's not the case. They are so disappointed that other people aren't praising them that to really make their point about how great they are, they'll kill themselves and take their own life so that other people will finally realize how much they should have paid attention to this person and how great they really were in the first place. And so no one has a lack of self-esteem. Our problem is not that we think too little of ourselves. Our problem is that we are petrified that other people don't think we're as cool as we want them to think. And that's not humility. That's pride. We are concerned and we obsess over what other people think about us because we are proud people. I won't have you turn there, but in 1 Samuel chapter 15, it's the story of King Saul being commissioned, being ordered, commanded by the Lord to go and fight against the Amalekites and to utterly destroy them. And Saul goes and he defeats the Amalekites, but instead of utterly destroying them and killing all of them like he was commanded to do, he actually keeps some of their best people alive, in particular King Agag of the Amalekites. And Saul took some of the best of the livestock, some of the best of the gold and the silver. And he comes back and ultimately Samuel addresses him in 1 Samuel 15 and asks why Saul kept all this stuff for himself. And you know what Saul said? He says, because I feared the people. And what he wanted to make sure was that in his battle, he was not just being obedient to the Lord. He wanted to make sure that the people of Israel realized how great he was by bringing back the Amalekite king and keeping him as kind of something to show off. Showing off how he could collect all the great livestock and all the great silver and gold and all that. That was totally pride, and he blames it on other people, but it was his pride that caused him to fear them in the first place. He thought he was great. He wanted other people to think that he was great, and so he disobeyed the Lord. That was a snare. That's Proverbs 29:25, where we started. The fear of man lays a snare. It was a trap. Saul's pride that led to his fear of man was a trap that kept him from obeying God. He was consumed with what other people thought about him. And by the way, this applies not just to the loudmouth braggarts, the people who always are telling a great story about themselves. Those people obviously are trying to get attention for themselves. They want you to believe that they're great, and so they'll tell you an amazing story about probably something unbelievable that they did so that you'll like them. That's pretty obvious to recognize. You realize that it's shy people who want approval as well. It's shy people who can be just as proud. They just don't say anything because they're afraid they'll mess up if they open their mouth and they'll say something silly. And then people will actually realize that they're not that great. And so then they won't like them as well. So shy people are just as guilty of the prideful fear of man as people who are telling great stories and they're the hero of every story that they tell. In both cases, that comes back to pride. That's the first root of the fear of man. The second root of the fear of man is unbelief. The reason that we are concerned, or a second reason we're concerned with and governed by what other people think about us, is because of, very simply, unbelief. Either because we don't know what God has said, or probably more likely, we don't trust what God has said and what he's revealed to us in his word. You realize if we had all the faith that we needed to, we would have listened to what God says about what is real and what is relevant and what is most important. And it's actually not whether you have Mac or Windows, as fun as that is to talk about. It's not whether you drink Starbucks or Tully's or Seattle's Best or all those other inferior coffees. It has nothing to do with that, because those things don't matter. They really don't. And I promise you this, that when we get to heaven, for those of us who are Christians, when we get to heaven, the Apostle Paul is not going to ask us about what it was like to have Nike shocks. You know, I didn't get to live. You know, we're going to be asking them stories about what was it like. The apostles are not going to come be running up to us and ask us what it was like to have an iPhone. What was that like? I always wanted one of those. But God wouldn't let me go down and get one. And yet we watch those commercials that are telling us about all of the temporal things that are going to burn, that mean nothing, that are not really real in the sense of having real and lasting value and relevance. But yet we listen to what we're told by our friends, by people on TV, by what they're wearing, by all of the people in Hollywood who are the celebrities. What are they doing? What are they talking about? What are they wearing? All that kind of stuff is unbelief on our part because we are failing to listen to what God says is real and relevant and lasting. And it lays a snare. Think about guys like Peter and maybe Timothy, who because they did not trust in God's promises, they ended up, based on wanting other people to think something about them, they were fearful in their lack of confession of Christ. Now, in Peter's case, when he denied Christ, perhaps there was some actual fear of his safety as well. But it comes back to the same thing, being consumed with what other people thought about him. And so his unbelief in what was real and what was right and in the promises of God kept him fearing men and living based on what they thought of him rather than on what God thought of him. Well, there's one more root. So we've talked about pride as a root of the fear of man and unbelief as a root of the fear of man. The third one, I think, is probably the most serious. It's probably the worst of the three. I'll give you the name of it here in just a second. But tell me this. If you are living wanting other people's attention, that's what the fear of man is. If you are consumed with what they think about you and you want them to think you are great and to think highly of you, what are you actually wanting from them? You're wanting their worship. You realize that when you live consumed with what other people think about you and wanting them to think highly about you, you want their praise. You want their worship. And you know what that makes you? An idolater. The worst root of the fear of man is idolatry because we have made ourselves into God. Is that not exactly what we're supposed to do with God? We're supposed to think highly about Him. We're supposed to get other people to focus their attention on Him. We're supposed to live our lives and wear our clothes and have our things in such a way, not that people see us and glorify us, but rather that they see our God and they glorify Him. And when we stop at the level of getting people to focus on us and then let their focus remain on us, then we are trying to inch God out of His throne and His rightful place and put ourselves in His position. That's idolatry. That's another God. That's self-worship. That's a self-God. But any other God is idolatry. Maybe you think that's a little bit extreme. Maybe you think that's harsh to say that when I was in junior high, what I was, my biggest problem was that I was an idolater. But that's exactly what I was. The idol was me. The idol was the person I saw in the mirror who I wished was hotter so he could get more attention. The same thing happens to a group of authorities in John chapter 12. John chapter 12, verse 42 says this, "Nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in him." That is, they believed or had a measure of faith in Christ. "But for the fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God." So here these authorities, these weren't just followers. These were people who already had some measure of esteem and respect anyway. These authorities had some idea of faith in Christ, but yet they feared the cool...
Программа подготовлена Славянской Библейской Церковью совместно со служением Слова Благодати, целью которого является распространение влияния библейской истины. Мы верим, что эта программа была благословением для вас. Вы можете получить дополнительную информацию о служении Слова Благодати на интернете www.slovo.org. Да благословит вас Бог!